We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're in episode 585 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Jim Hilton, and to help me talk some Valencia, Lewandowski, Araujo, and Barça Femení, it's Emil Evanesian. Welcome back to the show, Emil.
What's up, Dan? How are you?
Maybe not fine. I watched Valencia just like you did yesterday. I'm doing all right, but I did watch the Femení on Saturday, too, so I guess I'm doing a little bit better. So let's dive in first, before we get to the Femení making the Champions League final again, to the 4-2 win for Barça over Valencia, which has a scoreline that, of course, does flatter Barcelona because there was a red card and Barcelona had an extra man for quite a bit of time and all that stuff. And I think the first thing we'll ask about is Frances and I last week, of course, after the big announcement, Xavi is staying for another year and all that stuff, you reflected on the fact that Barça had played so well, went on that big unbeaten run after Xavi announced he was leaving. And it is, what's the word, serendipitous? I don't know what it is, but there is something about Barcelona stinking up the joint when Xavi announced he'd be back for the next season. I know that's not a real thing, but I also see some of the mistakes in performance, like just the mental lapses from yesterday that we're going to get into individually, but the mental lapses from yesterday were almost seemingly as worrying as anything physically that was happening, anything tactics-wise you want to break down, whatever you want to say. It just, there seemed to be a lack of focus, lack of concentration, and that is a major disappointment after PSG and Real Madrid, when the 11 that Xavi chose, you know, he could have, still going for second place, but he still could have rotated a bit more, or again, protected Lamine Yamal. He could have protected Pau Gasol, given them some rest, even though now it looks like they're either going to be central figures at the Euro, or they're going to be central figures at the Olympics, and not both. So you either get to play, you can be on both rosters, but you can only be an important figure in one of those. But anyway, yeah. To Xavi, it's unfortunate that it seems like the team, we'll say went back to their old ways, what they were in the fall, the second the Xavi says, I'll be back next season.
And look, I really do think that is just kind of a dumb luck timing thing. Though Xavi put out a strong 11, the whole thing had a lot of kind of last day of school vibes, or, you know, like kind of, I think the team might have taken second place a little bit more for granted, you know, than, you know, prior to the game than maybe they ought to have. But
well, I think it's even a bit, not say more to that, but with that drop off emotionally, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that obviously the team was up for PSG. You want to win quarterfinal in the Champions League. You want to make the Champions League final. Then they get up for Real Madrid because you really want to win a Clásico. La Liga is on the line. So as much as I had said, yes, what were Barcelona fighting for yesterday? They were fighting at home in the rain with the lowest attendance of the season, with the escalators broken up the hill at Montjuïc.
Yeah.
So what were the team fighting for? They were fighting to that point for second place so that they qualify for the Spanish Super Cup, so that they make enough money so that they can register a Guido Rodriguez from Real Betis. And so to ask these players, hey,
get excited, everyone.
You might not be around next season. Do you mind giving us your heart and soul so that we can register a 3.5 million euro signing?
The 3.5 million euro signing that will hopefully help bridge the gap when we have to pawn off one of you pricier types.
Right. And or shoot four made of space or something, right? And so that's what you're asking the players to get up for that match for, again, in the rain with the crowd the way it was. You're asking the fans to get up for that reason. Meanwhile, Valencia, to their credit, they came in saying, we're not going to touch the ball once. We're going to try to win on the counterattack. This is what we're going to do. We're going to be very vertically compact, and we're going to see what we can do here in these conditions. They came in with a devout game plan. I think that's kind of what we want to speak about here, about the issues too, about this game with Valencia, where I find Xavi a little culpable in that Valencia clearly had a game plan. Is it one that would have Barca fans rioting? Of course it would. Of course it would be, right? If Barca possibly did that. But Valencia came in with a plan saying what we're fighting for is a spot in Europe. They're only, if they'd won this match.
3 points off or something?
Right. They came in 3 points off with Real Sociedad and Real Betis right in front of them. So they're fighting for a European spot is Valencia. So there is something on the line for them with more substantial, we'll say, emotion than Barcelona did. But my concern even was the X and O's, that it seemed like Xavi, there were little things that I think he tinkered with, as in they were going to allow Christensen to drive forward with the ball. And he did that sometimes, and he didn't do that other times. And I actually think tactically, even though Christensen can't go 90, the move for Roberto at halftime was the right move because Christensen is not moving the ball quick enough horizontally.
No.
And the rare occasion that Barca did move it horizontally, good things happened, but it wasn't happening fast enough. The other change was that Gundogan basically played as a lone pivot because of 80% possession, even with the extra man, or sorry, all 11 men, that Gundogan as the central pivot was just there to move the ball back and forth as fast as he could. And even then, I mean, the ball kept stopping at Christensen, and they were having their issues at being Barcelona, moving the ball well and breaking down that block. And it's a tried and true thing that we know exists, that if you only have one player who can go at, who can command a double team against a low block like that in Lamine Yamal, unless you're moving the ball quickly and combining through the middle quickly, which was not happening. Because again, Christensen, that's not in his bag. That's not his job. He's a center back playing at yesterday in the opposing box. So it's not to be surprised. And it's one of those where I think Xavi, not say got it wrong, but maybe he should even have changed something up quicker. Don't waste your Vitor Roque breath yet, but respond to that. Then I want to do Vitor Roque.
I mean, I agree with you on the Christensen Sergio Roberto thing. I think as far as the game plan goes, I don't know that necessarily Xavi knew how Valencia would approach this game, but I mean, you could probably surmise that they needed a result of any kind. I don't know if more than Barca did, but probably more urgently than Barca did. I mean, Barca has more chances to lock down second place and bring this thing in relatively one piece. I was fascinated to see really the extent to which Valencia kind of didn't want the ball. I mean, I know you can probably assume that Barca is going to have the ball more than you, especially when you travel to Catalonia. And, you know, Valencia is not really like a team that thrives in bad weather or anything like that. So they're not really uniquely equipped to attack that. I don't know if Barca was almost expecting more resistance and found themselves with more space. But I mean, even, I don't even know if that was kind of the issue.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Because I think Xavi yesterday, my critique would be, I think he as a manager lacked a bit of bravery. I think sticking with the three center backs was, not say unnecessary, but between Koundé and Araujo, I think you just shift Koundé over a little bit and you put somebody on, even a Hector Fort that can get forward a bit more. I mean, Fort doesn't really get forward that much, but again, it's an opportunity potentially to kind of solve some problems and figure some things out. And I've said before, I mean, in that kind of circumstance, I say you switch Cancelo even over to right back. You keep Rafinha on as this wing back, left back, and then you throw on Ferran Torres and João Félix or whatever, and just throw on your forwards. You get after it because you're going to trust. Once they took off Hugo Duro as well, then you really only have Peter Gonzalez you're worrying about in transition. Alberto Marti, even though Pedri had to track him down for a game-saving tackle.
Yes.
I get that. But you're only now dealing with a 2v2 situation between Araujo and Koundé, and you still have to back them, even if the mistake that Araujo made was pretty damning before that. Shifting to just be a little more positive with the Fermín Lopez part, we don't know what Pedri's fitness was prior to the game or what status had been, but starting Fermín Lopez was the right choice from the jump.
I think so too.
Because Valencia generally do play a 4-4-2 usually, or they at least defend in a 4-4-2. So having Fermín Lopez popping up in the space in the middle of the field and supporting Lamine Yamal high, especially when you don't have Frankie de Jong and you're not starting Pedri, so you're not really expecting much more control Fermín López was the right choice. And as I've said, I said in the five headlines, you can go back and listen to that. I'm not going to reinvent the wheel when it comes to my Fermín López takes, but he is, interestingly enough, with Pedri and Gavi's health kind of being a question mark a little bit, we probably know what's going to happen to Pablo Torre. Then we don't even know about Vitor Roque. As far as young attackers or young midfield or high midfielders or high interiors, he may be the one guarantee for what his role will be next season. Again, we don't know about Pedri. We don't know about Gavi and their health and all that stuff. So Fermín López, on the squad, and I can almost say you copy and paste. Because again, even Rafinha and Koundé, you go, if the club gets a big enough offer, are they going to consider that if Araujo doesn't want to go, or if De Jong doesn't go and there are decisions to be made? But Fermín López, with his salary and with the 8 goals he scored this season, the most of any midfielders, again, I feel like you can copy and paste his role with the squad this season and that in the squad and say, I think actually we can guarantee that he'll have his exact same player 18 to 22 spot in the team next season, which wouldn't exist if, as I transition to the negative part of this about Vitor Roque, I had said for weeks now and months now that I was not worried about how little he played or how little he did. So at this moment, though, over the course of his adaptation period, we'll call it, he's played 13 games, so 11 in the Liga and 13 in the Copa del Rey. He scored 2 goals in the Liga. He has started in 13% of his games since arriving. He has played 20% of all minutes, and he's participated in 6% of the goals that have been scored since he arrived. Which, those numbers, if I just said adaptation period, or there were better, I'm not say excuses, I would be fine with that. But there kind of are no excuses as to how rough things might be. I mean, Xavi's had to answer questions about him in the media, and he said, you know, he's adapting, he's coming along. And I wish that Xavi had, or maybe he'll do this in the Girona presser prior to that game or something, when he gets another question, of course, about Vitor Roque, with all the news from Sport coming out today and yesterday about Vitor Roque potentially going out on loan, that the club and Xavi both agree that, with the former Brazilian scout, now his agent, that being Vitor Roque's agent, Andre Curti, that he should go out on loan, likely to a European side. The issue with sending him out on a European side next season already, and obviously his agent, Curry, knowing, having been a scout for Barcelona, knows that going out on a loan at Barca, even Pablo Torre, who went out on a loan to think, hey, if you have a good loan, you could come back and make it all work. And even Ansu Fati, go to Brighton, get yourself back. Everybody knows you out on a loan, and more often than not, Fermín López going to Linares, that is a stroke of brilliance or luck or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
Going out on loan and coming back doesn't really work out for anybody. It usually means that you're going to be gone the next time. The problem with that, though, is that this season was the adaptation period, and I did expect by next season, when he's in his 19, then he turns 20 in February, to hit the ground running a bit, not scoring a lot of goals, but just being a member of the team. And if he's not even featuring in, I don't want to call these throwaway minutes, but if he's not featuring at all, if he can't get a spot off the bench, instead the club is trying to spend money on João Félix. Félix has a different pedigree than Vitor Roque, but you did spend. I mean, this is where the salary and all the money comes in the back. I know the other 30 million are in non-guarantees or in all the incentives.
Yeah, it's all the incentives and things like that.
Right, which obviously if he's playing 13% or if he's playing 20% of all minutes, he's not going to hit those. But you still paid 35 million euros up top when you don't really have a left wing that you can trust, even though they thought João Félix, I think, was going to be a star. I mean, that may be a little silly, but if you still are missing major pieces and you spent 35 million euros on Vitor Roque, it seems like that is a problem. It seems like that is an issue with the transfer that you made. Because if Vitor Roque at 19, you got him early and he's a great Brazilian forward, and he basically by 21, he becomes what he should be and he can phase out Lewandowski. But my concern is that his adaptation period is not an adaptation period and merely Xavi and Barcelona saying this guy is not good enough for what the 35 million we paid for him. And that is a huge, huge alarm bell for me.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every bit of behavior that we've actually seen from Xavi and I guess the coaching staff and whatever, because I'm sure I think this almost turns into like kind of a, you know, obligatory kind of NBA comparison is, you know, when a general manager drafts a project in the lottery and really wants the coach to give him some minutes to get him acclimated. And you have a coach whose main responsibility is the product on the court or on the pitch, as it is in this case, just saying like, no, this guy's not ready. Vitor Roque is essentially a 2 years away from being 2 years away lottery pick that in kind of an ideal scenario gets some run and starts showing some promise. And the fact is, yeah, I mean, this on a broader kind of season scale, I know there was still, you know, a little bit of peril on, you know, around second place. And so it's not purely garbage time at the end of the season. But we're basically there. Like it kind of feels like the last day of school now for these things. And
well, Girona again is the last big one, because if they get the 3 points against Girona, that is second place. So that's the last game that truly matters. And then you have what, 3 more games remaining that really are nothing. And so that is, Vitor Roque should be playing in those matches after Girona, because if they lose, second place pretty much gone anyway. And if they win, then they've got it. They've got second place pretty much wrapped up by that point. So.
Yeah, so as it is, so Barca are up 2 points on Girona now. And I mean, the thing is, even if you get, I mean, ideally you'd like to beat Girona, but even if you just get a point out of that match and you essentially have to protect a 2 point lead for 4 games, a 35 million euro striker, you know, I don't care that he's 19. I don't care that he's never played in Europe or whatever. This guy should be good enough to be a, even if he's not a huge game-changing factor, just be a literal presence. Just be a lump with a pulse against a mid-table side, effectively. You know, and maybe upper mid-table side, like Valencia are. And that's what I was saying. I mean, I think the signs that you're seeing from Xavi and the coaching staff is just, if there was any affinity or if they saw some potential and they were thinking, okay, he's raw, but we can work with this guy and he needs to work on this and that. He needs reps, he needs burn, this, that, whatever. You'd be seeing it.
Well, you should have been able to against Valencia. There should be enough confidence in the squad and the attackers to start Rafinha on the right wing or Ferran Torres on the right wing, and then you start Joao Felix or the other one, Ferran Torres, on the left wing, and then you put Vitor Roque in for one of them off the bench. And that you should have enough faith in your team to be able to rotate Lamine Yamal for a whole game against Valencia and not have to think twice about it. And that is a concern to me, that there isn't enough institutional trust, because to that point about Vitor Roque, how my only criticisms and fears is that you spent 35 million that you, by sending him out on loan, I think even next season, is an admittance that we screwed this one up when there's no money to spend and we're barely being able to register Inigo Martinez, whose registration ends June 30th. And, you know, you're having these conversations
That's the biggest thing. I feel like there's still elements, and I understand it's an oversimplification maybe, but I think there's a little bit of old habits dying hard. Kind of punting 35 million on Roque, 19-year-old Brazilian, who's not, everything I ever read about him is, you know, he's not whatever, Neymar or Vinicius, Vinny or whatever.
He's a taker. He's a space hunter. He's a space taker, and he's a poacher. I think teams need that But I think Xavi, as you mentioned, I think he's surprised at how little positional sense he has with the limited technical tools he has at this point in his career.
Barca is still Barca. Like, we are still one of the biggest, most prestigious, blah, 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 like, clubs in the world and whatever. Like, this is a thing that we can do. It's like, no, dude, it's not. Just right now, it's not. $35 million means something. And the notion that, I think back to, for example, I mean, my opinion of Ferran Torres has improved dramatically from the first sort of half season that he came in, where it was cataclysmically bad, the first fraction of the season that he was here. But all the same, I mean, when you think about it, like, I mean, I keep going back to this, but the 2-3 years of conversations that we've had about, you know, the absolutely dire financial situations and staring into the abyss and, you know, difficult decisions have to be made. And, you know, Lionel Messi and Sergi Busquets and Jordi Alba were at the Miami Heat game yesterday, in some part because of all that stuff. And you've spent roughly $100 million on Ferran Torres, who was the first sort of mega acquisition of the austerity era. And then you chucked another 35 for Vitor Roque, and you don't get to do that. You know, I mean, it's not quite on the level of whatever it was, $150 million or $140 million for Coutinho or one of these other disastrous moves, but it's pretty bad.
A concern for Vitor Roque is that he's in, like, I would say, like, the B tier of prospects. Like, he is not a can't miss. Like, I would argue that, like, Estevao Willian is a can't miss, because even if he were, like, where is his floor and how much reset value to have on his floor? For Vitor Roque, because of the kind of striker and poacher that he is, if he's not actually giving you production in terms of goals, then he's not necessarily worth his weight in gold. And it's also almost mismanagement to this point, because, yes, if you flop on a 35 million euro signing when you have Mark Yu, and the same argument, too, is that without a proper pivot and with Gabi injured, the things that Vitor Roque does well, which is he presses really well, and maybe, again, he's not understanding those permutations well enough, and that's coming along, too. I thought that he'd be rather good at that, but maybe he's not picking up those things in training. That's possible. But I also think without Gabi and without a proper organized pivot to understand that rest defense at a high level the way Busquets did, because, again, he wasn't the fastest, but Busquets, he was usually at almost the tip of that trident of the press because of his understanding of space and angles and to break that stuff down and to keep the ball in that rest defense set while you had the ball and being in a defensive shape there while taking possession and moving up the field almost in a game of risk. And without that proper game organizer and orchestrator, because that's not what De Jong is, that's not what Pedri is, that's not what Gundogan is, and that's not what Christensen is, then the press has been less than stellar this season. And when you talk about the great defense that Barcelona played, yes, they had a lot of luck last season, but it had a lot to do with their rest defense was much better, and they were set up even with the ball. I mean, this Valencia match yesterday was the exact... It is the exclamation point of the point that I'm making, is that last season, as lucky as Barcelona were defensively, they were built to create their own luck defensively by having organized rest defense and being organized while in possession to defend. And this team yesterday against Valencia had none of that. That's why their greatest success in recent weeks is, I think, credit to Sergio Allegri, sure, on his set pieces, which Roberto did give him credit after the match for his great set piece work. Sure, but I think you're seeing a lot of issues defensively because this team is disorganized to defend while on the ball. And that is not going away. And I think, especially with Gabi getting hurt, it's just a glaring hole of a player that can help solve some of those problems, but not even help solve those problems, but put out fires while you're still disorganized. Because Gabi, as we saw too, he didn't make the defense better. He just put out more fires. And I think the two things I want to go on here is talking about the on-field and off-field stuff and how those are kind of meshing these conversations as we end this season. In the case of Araujo, and less so with Ter Stegen, I think he's going to be the guaranteed starter anyway next season, and then and Lewandowski as well. Because with Araujo, to all of what I just said, Araujo is injury... he is injury prone. That's true. Freudian slip. But he's also error prone. Terrific physical skills and physical gifts do make up for the errors he has. But with Barcelona's...
He's super high variance.
Yes. And so Barcelona's unbalanced defense in transition this season, more so than last year, and inability to keep it in the different phases of play defensively, means that Araujo is being put in more circumstances to commit more errors, which he does. And he's being exposed for those errors more so this year, which bring that into the other part of it. If Bayern says, hey, our structure is good enough to have what Barcelona had last season and limit his errors and limit the mistakes that he's going to make, we love his physical tools and we can make the most of those the way Barca did last season, we'll give you 80 million. Now we're having a different conversation about Araujo because, but it's also we're having a different conversation about Barcelona because you keep Araujo because of his physical gifts that he has. You expect that a manager, i.e. Xavi, is going to be able to put him in the best position to succeed. But there's this undying dogma that if, I don't even know what to say. If Barcelona want to play a certain way, that he's never a perfect fit. No, but as we've always seen with Barca, I don't want to get too lost in the sauce here about dogmatism because, again, Puyol was never great on the ball, but there was a passion to him. There was a physical element to him, but he also a full understanding of the game that Araujo doesn't
I think it's
really
the understanding. Have. I think it's knowing where the borders are, like knowing where his limitations lie. And yeah, that was the thing. Puyol never... Yeah, it's kind of on paper, just in a purely technical sense. Yeah, you could say that Puyol was not ideally suited to play the Barca way, which would be absurdity of a thing to say. But I think it was that. I think it was his understanding and just understanding of himself. Like, he understood what the Barca way was, but I think more importantly, he knew what he was and what he wasn't. And I don't know that he ever really... He played, you know, kind of with... Yeah, it was passion. It was blood and guts and everything else. He very rarely kind of colored outside the lines in terms of his role. He knew what his responsibility was, and he wasn't under the mistaken impression that he was or could be something more, I don't know whether it's spectacular or impactful or Barca-esque or whatever you want to say. Yeah, I think that's what made him so special. And I think, because, yeah, you can probably argue that Araujo has far greater just raw physical tools.
He's like double the size, double the height of Puyol.
Double the height, and he's. But I mean, he's a colossus. He's strong. He's so in terms of raw materials, in terms of physical gifts, he's got it all. And the thing is, like, he's not an unintelligent player. I just think he struggles with. I think he struggles to identify the limitations of his role, or kind of the limitations of what he should be making himself responsible for.
Well, I think it's with when he gets himself in trouble, which is the last 2 weeks with these tackles. The thing with his injuries as well is the real scary thing about pace. And it's if Araujo, for some reason, you know, with all the injuries he's picked up over these years, if he is not at 100%, if he is less than he was, reminding me of, I had two examples, by the way, NBA players. This is for the old hats. The guy that I'm thinking of when you said the young player who never really fit was Jermaine O'Neal. That was
okay.
The way. And then for this example, I'm going to hit you with, I've been reading a book about the New York Knicks from the 90s. It's a Larry Johnson situation where you go, of course, that guy is physically, there is nobody on the court or the field or whatever who is going to be superior to Araujo. But if their physical limitations are, or if they're not at their peak of their physicality, then, and they're relying solely on game understanding.
Yeah, it's guile and tactics
Then they're going to be prone to mistakes in the way that Larry Johnson, when he had that back injury, he would just constantly put himself in foul trouble.
He's an excellent example because there's probably one of the most profound, and I mean, you know, whatever we can say, like Penny Hardaway or whatever, but probably one of the most profound examples of unguardable, just physical colossus, just incredible.
And for the younger kids, I just want to say, like, if you're playing FIFA or you're playing, well, EA 24, whatever it is now, or NBA, whatever, back in the day, there was this thing called NBA Jams.
Yeah.
It was Larry Johnson because it was a simple game where you wanted the biggest, fastest, and the computer was like, the vitals on this guy are off the charts.
Yes.
So you constantly, you know, there used to be a little fire meter and he would just on fire and he could dunk from half court because, you know, the mechanics and physics were broken in the 90s game. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about just that, hey, I want that guy on a video game because he's a cheat code in a video game because the video game doesn't understand how to put his vitals to, like, be fair because his physical stuff is just so much beyond
him. He basically had the dent. Yeah, he basically had the density of like Karl Malone in Charles Barkley's height, but could dribble the ball like a, you know, a stretch four now. And yeah, and so, but the drop off after, once the back injuries really took their toll, was incredible. Like he didn't taper off. Like it went off a cliff, because
yeah,
so much of his dominance was predicated on just being this physical marvel. And that's the thing, when it, like some of that stuff, when it goes, it goes. And
but it, and that's what I'm saying. Araujo is 25, 26, and it's and they're already aware that it might be going in a certain negative direction, and Bayern Munich has 80 million. And I think part of that is in the back of his mind. I think that's a real thing. I think he is, this season, he had never really been in the transfer rumors before. He's a future captain. That's how he was talked about for years. And this is the first time when there's smoke, there's fire. And we keep hearing this about 80 million, Bayern Munich or Manchester United, and teams are coming for him. And I feel like that's weighing on him quite a bit, in a way that it's funny with Lewandowski and the hat trick, because this is where we'll end this conversation about Valencia. Then let's end with the Barça Feminine. For Lewandowski, it's so funny because he makes that comment about he's not going anywhere next season. Why would he? His salary is apparently reportedly jumping up to 33 million. So of course the club's like, well, we paid 35 million on Vitor Roque, but actually we can eat that, because, or we have to eat that, because Lewandowski is going to cost us just 33 million, which is completely untenable for Barca, by the way, because just doing the math, and I did the math here, that leaves you with De Jong, assuming that he stays at his number, makes 20% of your wage bill next season, and Lewandowski makes 14% of your wage bill, and Gundogan makes 10% of your wage bill, which
is... That is bananas.
Correct. But that's the situation Barca's in, so why... I mean, and all those players are going to say, why am I leaving? And also, again, Gundogan arguably has had his best individual season of his entire career. He'll be 34 shortly, and he'll likely end this season having the most minutes of any player in the squad, so... That is a concern, but, and that, by the way, followed by Koundé, Lewandowski, Cancelo, and Ter Stegen, the five players that played in 2,000 minutes so far, and we can have different transfer and speculation and salary conversations about each of those guys, but just speaking primarily about Lewandowski, it's really frustrating, because for the players to hear criticism, and I get it from Lewandowski, you hear criticism this season even after your good showings, because your goal-scoring numbers are still exactly what you're expected to do in the Liga, maybe a little lower, but it is practically impossible for their performances to justify their salaries. And De Jong is in that circumstance. Lewandowski's in that circumstance. He's definitely going to be in that circumstance next season. So it's this frustrating thing for Lewandowski, where you want to talk about players that have won the most points with their goals in the Liga this season. Lewandowski's won 17 points with 16 goals. Bellingham has won 14 with 17 goals. And Mayoral has won 14 points with 15 goals. Players with most goal contributions in the Liga this season, tied at the top for 24, is Lewandowski with Doidbuk of Girona. Then you have Sorloth with 22, Bellingham with 21, Griezmann at 19, and Guruzeta with 19. So he's where he's supposed to be in all the La Liga rankings and all that stuff. And so I understand, especially with his character, Lewandowski is like, hey, you're paying me to score goals. You're paying me to be Robert Lewandowski. And I feel like I've done some of that, and yet you're still criticizing me to no end. This has still been a frustrating season for me and all that stuff, because there's no way for him to possibly make good on the salary that he's making. And
I mean, they would have had to make the Champions League final, probably.
Yep.
Or then we'd be like, yeah, that's cool, fine. Like, you know, some of the marginal cash that's coming in, yeah, that's great. Like, give it to Lewandowski.
and even Rafinha, like, moving that aside too, because don't look now, but Rafinha has 4 assists and 4 goals in his last 7 games.
Yeah.
He's up 9.
Well, he's been fantastic.
Yeah, he's up to 9 goals and 12 assists on the season, playing now majority of his time at left wing, where he's supposed to not be comfortable. And that totals to 21 goal contributions in 34 matches this year. Last year, he had 10 and 12 in 50 matches, or 22 goal contributions. So again, reminding you of his big Leagues United star season, he scored 11 goals and 3 assists that year for 14 goal contributions. So this season, he's on pace to have his highest goal contributions in his career. And even in the case of Rafinha, like, hey, this is, you paid me this money to come here and be better than I was at Leeds. And statistically, I know you criticize me, but I've been better than what I was at Leeds. Actually, I'm terrible with percentages, but I'm, what, 66% better when it comes to goal contribution than my seasons at Leeds. And I've been the guy that you wanted me to be. And I haven't even complained this year when you made a 16-year-old the starter over me. I didn't complain that he took my spot. I just moved over to the left side and adapted. Or in the first half of the season, I let him, not let him, but, you know, he took the starting spot for me and I didn't make it think about it. So Rafinha has actually been a pretty gosh darn good soldier for the fact that
Rafinha's actually been great. Coming into this season, I was a little iffy. I mean, because he was another where I was like, you know, you think of the price tag and you're like, okay, like he's certainly not a bad player, but is this another one where, you know, we spent, what was it, 65 million or whatever it was?
55 plus for him as well. I think it was.
I think it tops out at 65. Again, like getting into the conversation of sort of the granular, has someone, how much of their transfer fee has someone justified? I don't know. But he's been a very good player. And in the way that we can nutshell this, is the funny thing is like, yeah, Lewandowski has not played badly, strictly speaking, you know? And I think some of his goals have been concentrated in, like, he hasn't scored the goals when you want them to score the goals in the huge moments. So I understand that. But okay, so, but on paper, like, you know, he's playing well. And Rafinha's had a good season. And Ferran Torres, who... essentially, I mean, more than a bit part player, but he's not a headliner. He's been fine, if not better than just a sort of a meh fine, you know?
Well, he's been fine if he cost 25 million euros.
Yes. But the point being, like, even agnostic is sort of like, if we just scrap the transfer fees, you know? But so I think, so we can kind of point at everybody and be like, no one's, because you're not looking at too many people and going like, man, that guy really stinks, or, you know, he's, you know, so-and-so's been playing terribly. I think what's kind of maddening about it, and so many of the conversations that I have here in one way or another sort of come back to this, is like the squad in totality is less than the sum of its parts. And were it not for like a couple of teenagers, this thing would just be a tire fire. Like, teenagers who cost nothing are bailing out this quarter billion, third of a billion worth of player squad. And so you're basically just like, yeah, like thank God these two children showed up to, you know, to drag like this posse of like centimillionaires to respectability or something close.
They're so young that Barcelona have to be thinking, well, by the time Lamine Yamal, I mean, they're going to give them extension, but by the time they're like 21, when it's time for that real big payday, they're hoping, well, Lewandowski and De Jong will finally be off our books so that our big earners at that point could be a 21-year-old Lamine Yamal and a 22-year-old Pau Gubarsi, because they cannot afford to give them major extensions until the big guys are off the books. And that is...
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm done with talking about this. I know.
It's a bummer.
We end the show. It was almost a lot of bad news with the Femini, because there was that loss at home to Chelsea 2 weeks ago, and it was their first defeat at home. This is unbelievable. I almost have to always say Barca Femini stats and records in slow motion. Yeah. That being that 1-0 loss to Chelsea, where they were outplayed by Chelsea at home. That was their first defeat at home in 5 years in any competition.
Yeah, it was May of 19.
Years, 5 years since they had lost in any competition. So pretty unbelievable. And you can read into bigger things with this or smaller things into this. So I'm going to throw a lot at you, Emil, for the Femini, and then wherever you want to go is where you go. So my thoughts after watching the second leg were as such. Maybe I'm biased because of the Femini, but I thought the second yellow for Buchanan coming in the 59th minute, Barcelona, not to say the second yellow mattered, but they were already percolating. They were already the better team up to that point. They were pushing even prior to the yellow. So they had a good response, I think, throughout that game. And the second yellow was more questionable than the penalty, but the penalty was a penalty, which may have happened with 11-11 anyway. And then Rafa converts the penalty and Barcelona moving on. I also think about Barcelona in that first leg. Well, they weren't as good. If Alexia finishes the important chances he missed coming on as a substitute, then Barcelona likely get 1-1 there anyway and are fine.
It's funny, you have to talk about the two legs almost in tandem, because the first leg, you know, I was there, I was watching everything about that first, whatever it was, 30 minutes, 35 minutes. You know, I mean, essentially until Chelsea scored almost. Chelsea had virtually no attacking impetus early in that first leg. And I understand this was essentially just a Mourinho-esque turtling and, you know, just, you know, do all of that. And I mean, I'm trying not to get out like the flamethrower or anything, but I mean, the game plan was, I mean, it was an abomination. Like for a team that theoretically that's won 5 of the last 6 and 7 of the last 9 domestic titles in their league, which, you know, everyone talks about, you know, Spain is a farmers league or whatever, but they've done that in England. And is this supposed superpower of a team to essentially play with, and I understand, like, but the thing is, they actually pushed Barca last year in the semifinals also, but to play with essentially so little, I don't know, intent, confidence, self-esteem, whatever it was, and cynical fouls, and the apparently, like, just plagued by an army of invisible snipers. And, you know, like, it was an abomination. I mean, like I said, I think it was, the only person that could have loved that was Jose Mourinho, like, just giggling maniacally. And even he probably thought it was a bit much. So anyway, okay, so they clipped the goal, and it wasn't even Alexia. It was, I thought, throughout the game, but particularly in the first half, Salma Barayuelo, if not a hat-trick, she could have had a brace in the first half. She could have had a hat-trick, you know, just during, you know, throughout the course of that game. She finished very poorly. I mean, I'm not like a, I don't profess to be some sort of master tactician or, you know, anything like that. But there's been so much that Jonathan Heraldes has done over these last two matches that have been really puzzling to me. So for one, putting Ona Batlle on, she is a left back, and she is arguably the best left back in the world. And also she has a fantastic rapport, chemistry with Salma. I mean, I think off the top of my head, at least 3 or 4 goals that she has directly, just through her blazing speed, gone to the touchline, crossed in for Salma. Why you would put, and I understand Fridolina Rolfo finished 4th in the Ballon d'Or, and she's been playing left back and whatever. But the thing is, throughout her time with Barca, Rolfo has played in midfield, at right back, at left back, and even like in attack in a pinch. If you're now kind of trying to navigate this embarrassment of riches and figure out how to get all these stars on the back line, put the one who's played right back before at right back, and don't put the best left back in the world on the right. The lack of substituting kind of in both matches was sort of obscene. Claudia Pina began warming up before halftime in the first leg. And then they came back out. She continued working out. So she effectively just did about 45 minutes of cardio and then watched the last 15 minutes of the match just on the touchline once it became clear that she wasn't getting in. Even in this other match, I mean, I don't understand. So, and then he played this weird 3-5-2 thing in London, and I'm not sure who that was for. At no point, both the second half of the first leg, where they sort of seemed to be quickly running out of ideas the last 20, 25 minutes, and then the second leg, even though like they had some chances, these were the most disjointed performances I think I've seen in a while. And I'm not sure whose skills and whose game was supposed to be amplified and magnified or elevated by these tactical decisions. Look, Chelsea did what they did, and they did it almost well enough. But again, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like the only thing that can stop this death machine is just their own flubs, whether it's missing chances or not playing your best players.
Yeah, and I think with the Femini this season, I'm definitely caught between two minds, because I do think watching other teams around Europe, there, even though Chelsea, as cynical as it was, other teams talent-wise are catching up, game-plan-wise. Is Barcelona, are they going back to the mean a little bit, or is the other teams, are they catching up at Barcelona, and even in terms of reinforcing with their squad? I mean, the Femini and that trickle-down effect from the top all the way down from the club, I mean, can affect them too. But so there's the two minds I'm in, is that with Garza is already having his swan song. You already know he's leaving. And it is a reminder that he's going to the NWSL at the end of the season. Sure. But there's pros and cons all of it, right? Some Paradello is still just 20 years old. And the fact that we're saying, is she a striker or is she a left winger, is a good question to ask, but also a concern, because the same argument is you have Bronze, you have Rolfo, you have Bate as your fullbacks. How do you handle that? Because you could get it, obviously, you could get it absurdly right, because you have 3 of the top, 7 fullbacks, 5 fullbacks, arguably. Like, that's what you're talking about, world football. So you can get it right. But again, if you miss that to your point, if you get it wrong and it doesn't work, and you then you say, well, what if they had done this the other way, then you got it wrong. And the same thing with Parel, where I think she's probably better as a left winger ultimately, but Barcelona, because they have other options at the left wing, they have a ton of players that you could either play a bit off the left or underneath, you know, Mariana. The same thing, that number nine is a position that they need to go after. And they've already been linked with Ellie Roebuck, the Man City keeper, who's reportedly signed a pre-contract with the club. But as for the number nine, who I think they do need to bring in, it does appear that Barcelona are looking to pay Iwer Pejor, who is one of the strikers, not Alexander Popp, the other one. And when you're talking about number nines, unless you're getting somebody that is Sam Kerr or her teammate in Pop, or you're getting an Alex Morgan or one of the, let's say, aging Americans, and Pop is 33 now, by the way, as well. So I don't know how much better you can do on the market than if they were to get Pejor and bring her in as their number nine. And then even this season, and one of the concerns, of course, is that they're facing Lyon again in the Champions League final in a few weeks. Lyon are not as good as they were the last final when they beat them, that being Barcelona, in 2022. But Lyon is the one hurdle that this Barca Femini team has not been able to get over. They lost the 2019 final. They lost the 2022 final. So this does really feel like, in this little mini era, when Barcelona, you felt like, were trying to take the crown from Lyon, this is that.
This is the crowning moment. This is your third time's the charm.
Well, so they can also do it in a quadruple season. So for all the issues that you and I are talking about with the Femini, if they beat Real Sociedad in a few weeks in the Copa del Arena, they're going to win the Liga this weekend, likely.
It's either this weekend or next week, yeah.
Right, with four matches remaining. And then you have the Champions League final on May 25th. They could still win the quadruple. Like, that's still possible. And then who are we, you know what I mean, to have all these
other games? Sure. But I think the problem is, like, they're now chasing their. I think this is like you cross this threshold at one point where they're now playing against their own standard, mm-hmm. and so their standard is an unimpeachable mind meld and just a complete savagery in attack. You know, all sixes is, you know, the sixth goal is just a way station on the way to eight. You know, and that kind of thing. And so with regard to the number nine, I mean, I think one of the great things about this team, especially up front, is there's a lot of versatility. I mean, I think, and we've seen it even in the back, where Ingrid Engen, I didn't think she was that good in the midfield, but she's moved to center back and she's a really good, solid. Yeah. Yep. That's where she can contribute to the Barca team. Cause I think she's a fine, solid midfielder. And for other teams who play in a different way, I think she'd be just fine.
I would rather give time in those.
But areas. Ironically, they only have two purely dedicated midfielders.
True.
In that it's Patry and Kira Walsh. Everyone else, Mariona wears number nine, and, you know, she started at number nine, which I thought was a monumental mistake. Either put Salma in the middle and Pina out on the left, or put Salma on the left and let Alexia play sort of in that false nine. I almost consider it almost like it's false nine, but she almost like posts up. It's almost like a Nikola Jokic-esque. You just put it up there.
Honestly, it reminds me of, what if Cesc Fabregas is that false nine made any sense and worked?
Yeah.
It's like the ideal was for Cesc Fabregas.
Yes.
Fabregas for Barcelona was not Alexia Putellas. That said, Alexia Putellas this season she's not ever gotten back to her best since the injury. And now she's post-30. And I don't know if she ever wins. I just want to let people know who aren't watching the Femini. Aitana Bonmati, of course, she took the crown with about everything, sure. But Alexia Putellas, it's okay that she may not ever be Alexia Putellas again. She still contributes quite a lot to the club and the system and all that stuff. And I'm still being patient. I think next season.
Well, I think it's too early to put her in a ceremonial role. Look, I said it at the time. Look, the first leg against Chelsea at home, 50 whatever thousand people, like, just, it's, the place is buzzing. You start her. Like, you don't do that. Like, I mean, I even think, like, what is the most extreme example? Like, would you bench 2003 Jordan? Would you bench 1996 Magic when he came back? No. This is an icon, foundational, like, the only reason any of this stuff matters is essentially because of this woman. Never mind that Wizards Jordan, if you got a 12 years of that, is still a Hall of Famer. But my point is that, you know, all of this insane meteoric rise over the past like 2-3 years, and she is not so deteriorated as a player that you can't put her on the pitch. Like, that baffled me. especially with, you know, her contract still isn't sorted out. So she's, if she's actually done with the club, if this is her last month or so with the club, you didn't start her. You gave her 27 minutes in the second half of the last Champions League home game in the Big House.
I don't know the numbers, but I think it would be a marketing. I don't know what number she's asking for, but I think it would actually be almost a marketing and promotion misstep because, again, the layperson in Catalonia or even the layperson on the internet still believes that we know that Alexia Putellas wasn't back to her best, but the normal person still thinks that she is the best player. I mean, again, I go back to the video game, right? EA 24, the highest rated player is still Alexia Putellas. He's not been the highest rated player in actual real life on the field in 2 years. But yet, I think we still view her that way, which is fair. And I think the club should continue to basically say, hey, we have this player that whether or not she is, everybody still is buying tickets and believing that she is on the top of the mountain right now. And I think we need to lean into that from even a marketing perspective, even a money.
Oh, 100%. So this is what I was going to say. Like let's go back to the NBA for comparisons, because it's really it's a rich vein to mine. So do you remember the final 2 years, the 2 years, $48 million that the Lakers gave Kobe post Achilles, post like all that, and everybody, like every NBA knower and thinker, just talked about it like it was the greatest misstep that you could ever. All along, I thought like that was such a no-brainer because there is nothing you were going to do. Okay, so you save the $24 million in cap space for a couple of years when your team is frankly going to start stinking, whether you have Kobe or not. There was no pathway to being good. So now you're going to come back to your fans too and be like, dude, the icon, the guy, the five rings and whatever. Hey, we, you know, the buses like saved a little bit of cash. No, you do that. And also, that's how stars know how you treat their players. Anyone who was complaining about the Kobe thing has never had a player worth actually like lionizing. And I don't want to say lionizing, okay, like off the court stuff and everything. I fully recognize that. But they has never had a player who has meant as much in the field of play. What are you talking about? I would absolutely trade the last decade of like complete like borderline irrelevance. I mean, we got a championship, I guess, but like the weirdest like outlier title. But like
that 2 year contract was one of the worst. I mean, for points and production per dollar, it was one of the worst contracts in the 21st century. However,
for the franchise, a bargain at twice the price.
Correct. So yeah. To your point, that the him as a legend of that franchise and what he meant to the team, then yes, where else are you going to put your money? And I think for Barcelona with Alexia, it's a similar thing where don't tell me as a club that Barcelona cannot afford any of the deals for the Femini players. Like, again, if you're investing in that, then put your money where your mouth is.
You
like,
should have saved some of that Vitor Roque cash.
Or even Oro Romeu. Like Oro Romeu.
Anybody. Yeah. Yeah.
Oro Romeu's salary is, is it? It's like a few hundred thousand more than the entire Femini squad.
It's in totality.
Exactly.
It's completely awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to talk.
We're not but so, about yeah, like I get fired up about this because my whole thing is like, yeah, like you cannot, first of all, you can't nail your, whatever. She is still a talisman. She is a superstar. She is a capital S superstar, like in the world, in the sport, whatever. You don't nail your capital S superstar to the bench at home.
Yep.
And honestly, like Mariona played not very well in the first, like, you know what I mean? Like there was,
I usually back her, but she was,
oh, I think I love her, but like she played a bad game that day. Like she just wasn't on. I don't know. You put your stars out, and because I think there's still also value to the other team when they're lining up and they see like the true, like, I mean, just murderer's row. It's Alexia, it's Aitana, it's Carolyn Graham Hansen, it's Salma. Like, it's essentially like every one of your, whatever, it's the who's who of the sport, and you put them out there and that, I mean, that has value too. And
about Mappy Leon's contract, even though Mappy Leon has been injured, you make sure that she's a part of this team next season. She's not over the hill in a way that Mappy Leon is not. part of that. To your point, I think.
And the thing is, Alexia, and I understand this is another injury that could further kind of, you know, be detrimental to her health going forward and whatever. But it's like she even missed a bunch of this season. And I think they were being very conservative with her, but I don't. Yeah. So she even missed a bunch of this season because I do think this season was supposed to be a transition to her being this sort of false nine. But I almost think of it as like kind of like that, like essentially a post up point guard, but playing in the middle of a front three.
Yep. So we're likely going to be talking obviously more about the Femini in the coming weeks, especially in preparation of the May 25th Champions League final, of course, which again, I think getting over Lyon would be the final hurdle. And I mean, especially winning a quadruple would be not say the end of this little era here, but it's going to feel like some kind of finality to, you know, they've basically accomplished all the objectives and they 100% the video game. So that's what it's going to feel like if they win the Champions League final. But again, I'll have that in a few weeks time, but we definitely talked enough in preparation for Girona on the weekend. So enjoy this show. I hope you enjoyed it at this point. So we've got a few days off now. Hope you're enjoying the YouTube shorts where I'm really getting into the transfer target stuff there before I dive into the La Masia update and transfer target and all that stuff in a few weeks when the season ends. So, of course, you can find him on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. Then also on Twitter at HiltonD13 for me. And then Patreon, as low as $3. That's how you get these shows without the ads. And, of course, the longer the show, the more ads you have to hear. So that's how you do that over on Patreon. Help the show as well. And then close Facebook group, Discord, YouTube channel, giving a subscription there, podcast apps, giving a nice rating. That's all the best ways for free to help the show. Thanks so much for listening, though, as always. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Of course, of course.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.